reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read, so I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, for this behind-the-scenes episode, I am chatting with Heather Duncan, who's the executive director at Mountains and Plains Independent Booksellers Association. Heather began her career in the book industry as a holiday bookseller at Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Other than a brief and educational stint at Fulcrum Publishing, she worked at the bookstore for the next 29 years, first in the ordering department, then as the outside corporate sales rep, and finally as director of marketing and events. While at Tattered Cover, Heather served on the Mountains and Plains Independent Booksellers Association Advisory Council, then on the board of directors. She left Tattered Cover in January 2018 to join Mountains and Plains as executive director. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome, Heather. How are you today?
I'm just great, Cindy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited that you're doing this interview with me. I'm really looking forward to diving into all of my questions about what you do.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I love this behind the scenes series. I do it once a month, and I usually will talk to somebody somewhere in the publishing industry about what they do. And often it's jobs that people don't know about or groups that they don't know about. And you are the executive director of the Mountains and Plains Independent Bookseller Association. I had to get all of that out there. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. I thought it might be best to start with the association itself. You could tell me a little bit about it, who participates, and then we could talk about what you do. Is that good?
Sounds great.
Perfect. So if you'll just give me a little bit or a lot of bit of a description about what Mountains and Plains does.
Absolutely. So Mountains and Plains is a nonprofit trade association, and we were formed in the late 70s, incorporated in 1980, in order to support independent bookstores. That's exactly what the mission of the association is, and that's what we try to do. So the members that we have are independent bookstores in right now 14 states in the mountains and Midwest regions of the United States. So we go all the way from North Dakota, Texas, all the way over to Nevada, and kind of everything in between. There are 8 different associations like mine that cover every region of the United States. And then there is a national association called the American Booksellers Association, which is not connected to any of the smaller associations, but we work very closely with them on lots of different programming and supporting each other.
Well, I was so curious when I first learned that there were 14 states and Mountains and Plains, and then California has its own, correct? It used to have a north and a south, and they merged, and so there's just one in California. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we laugh about it because California, which now, yes, has just one association, their association has more bookstores in the one state than I have in all of my 14 states. That's just how big California is. I think that might be actually not quite accurate anymore, but it's close. And part of the reason for that, if you think about it, is that while I have Texas and Colorado, which have huge numbers of independent bookstores in those two states, I also have Wyoming and the Dakotas and some states that are less populated and so have very few retail businesses in them that would fit our model. So it makes more sense when you think about it in those terms. I have a lot of geographic area that my region covers, but it's not very densely populated in most of my states.
Well, I was messing around on your website this morning, which I've spent countless hours on, but today I was really checking out the bookstores and everything, and I was fascinated by that. Like two in South Dakota, two in North Dakota, but then obviously so many here in Texas, so many in Colorado, a good number in Arizona. So it really does vary depending on the state in mountains and plains.
That's exactly right. And it just makes a difference with the population. I mean, there are, there is an independent bookstore in every major city in the United States, but when you think about what that means for a state like South Dakota, there aren't that many major cities in South Dakota. And the same thing with Wyoming. Wyoming does not have any major airports. And so their cities are small compared to most. And while we do have a bookstore in each of them, I think that equals 7 bookstores in total in my association representing Wyoming. It's very different in the bigger states, the most populated states. Yes.
I can see that. And then not every single bookstore necessarily belongs. Is that correct?
That is correct. We don't offer as many things for used bookstores, though we do have a lot of bookstores that sell used books. But if your store is only used books, you don't always get as much out of my association, since it has a lot to do with networking with publishers and discovering new titles and authors. Though we do have some strictly used bookstores that like to join for lots of various reasons. And of course, joining is completely optional. So, and it does cost some small amount of money to pay your dues. So not every bookstore does that. But I have found that if I discover a bookstore, which I'm finding them every day, whether they've been open a long time and I'm just discovering them, or whether they're opening, you know, having just opened or planning to open, when I reach out to them and explain what we do and why they should join, they tend to join. So we're very lucky in that way, that it's kind of an easy sell. We do offer a great deal of support for the stores for a dues fee that's usually, for most stores, about $50 a year. So
you really do. And some of the things I want to break out and talk about in a little bit, like Fall Con and Spring Con and Reading the West. But tell me a little bit more about some of the other things that Mountains and Plains does for bookstores.
Great. Yeah, we offer several, education is probably our biggest thing that we offer. And most of that is, as you mentioned already, our two big conferences that we do. We do a lot of education at those. We also do education on an ongoing basis virtually. So we have a bookseller summer school where we offer virtual programming, all different kinds of education, and various pop-up education throughout the year. The other things that we do are marketing support for bookstores. Most of my members are very small stores with small staff, 5 people or less. And so those retail businesses don't have a marketing department, let's say. And so what we offer is some what I would call turnkey marketing programs, one for our book awards that we give out in the spring, one for summer reading, and one for the holidays. Bookstores can participate in completely free to them, and it provides really good book marketing to their consumers, really without much effort on their part, so that they can have these get a lot of marketing out there for little effort on their staff.
And you have a weekly newsletter, because I get that as well.
That is correct. We send a weekly Monday morning bulletin that provides all of the important industry news, important deadlines, in support of both all of our programming as well as the programming of the American Booksellers Association. And sometimes even our regional colleagues have programs that my bookstores can participate in. So we make sure the bookstores have all the information they can possibly need, and kind of in a little quick digest, so they don't have to spend time gathering that information themselves.
Yes, it's very nice. It's in bullet points, and I just skim through it to see if there's anything that I want to check out. I love it. And you mentioned the American Booksellers Association, and you mentioned the other regional groups. How do you work with them?
Really, we are just colleagues. We spend a lot of time talking. The other regions, the executive directors of those regions, we have a Slack channel where we communicate regularly. We support each other, answer each other's questions. And then in lots of instances where there's programming that one of the regions is doing, generally virtual programming, they will open it up to all of our members, so that if one of the regions, and I can't remember which one, did some programming on diversity and inclusion, and some education and they wanted everyone to have access to it. So we just made that, we just promote that to our members so that they have that same opportunity as the region who's putting it on. The American Booksellers Association, we rely on them, all of the regions rely on them to do a lot of the stuff that we just aren't able to do. They have a large staff, so they do a lot of national advocacy for the book business in general. And we support that however we can, but it's not something that myself and my two staff members are able to do in the way that they do. So they provide national advocacy. They put on really large national bookselling events, which we support our bookstores in attending. And we promote those events as much as we can to make sure everyone is aware of them. The ABA also has really good relationships with the national publishers, with all of our publishing colleagues, and they do a lot of advocacy with them as well on our behalf. So we really rely on them and we support them then because they can do all of that for us. We support them in that work.
Well, and they were just invaluable during the pandemic in terms of educating stores, providing support, ideas for how to stay open during all of it.
Yes, it was critical. It was, the pandemic was, as we all know, something that we thought was going to be a huge harm to the independent bookselling community. And it certainly did impact everyone negatively, especially at the beginning. But because the ABA was so quick to put out resources and provide opportunities and education and information, and because we were all able as regionals to support that and spread that and make sure all of our booksellers knew about it, you know, most of the stores ended up coming through fine and some ended up coming through better than ever. It was everyone coming together. So we, while we work with the ABA all the time, we worked with them very closely during that time, for sure.
I bet. And yes, I always say there's a silver lining to any negative thing, and particularly the pandemic, because I think some bookstores learned so many different ways to market that they would not have had had they not had the pandemic, so that they did come out the other side stronger. Now, of course, I would never wish we'd had a pandemic, but the silver lining is that it did help some stores a lot.
It is absolutely true. And the other side of it that I think is another silver lining of the pandemic is that a lot of people's work situation changed for better or for worse for them and, you know, in the whole country. And that has turned into a really interesting uptick in people opening bookstores. And I think the amount of people that I've talked to when they are opening a bookstore and I say, you know, what made you decide to open a bookstore now or in the last year or two? And they say, you know, I lost my job during the pandemic, or I went remote during the pandemic and that was not for me, or what some other result of what happened to them during the pandemic. And they thought, you know, now's my time. I've always wanted to do something like this. Now's my time. And that's been a really interesting phenomenon. So it's a lot of people that I have talked to in the last few years as they've opened bookstores have said, if the pandemic had not interrupted their career in whatever way that was, they might not have done it. It's been fascinating.
That is fascinating. I was just going to say that. How fascinating. And I do know several people here in Texas that have opened stores. So yes, several of them have moved to open the store. So,
and I do think retail space became available as well. So it was a little bit of a perfect storm for people wanting to open businesses. But it's generally it's mostly due to their just deciding at that point, for whatever reason, that what they were doing before was either not an option anymore or not what they wanted to keep doing for the rest of their, you know, for the rest of their lives. So
makes sense. People reevaluate.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, let's talk about what you do as executive director.
Okay. Well, it's crazy because we have, like, as I said, we have a small team. There's myself, executive director, and then I have an operations manager and a marketing and communications manager. It's just the three of us. And what I do is, obviously, I run the association. So I have a board of directors who oversee what we do, of course, and do our long-term planning with me. So I support the board of directors and I work with them. I do membership development, and that is a lot of email, of course, and phone calls, but also I do a lot of traveling and visiting bookstores, which is one of my most favorite things to do. So, you know, the minute I took this job, which was just over 6 years ago, I went to as many states as I could and drove around to see all the bookstores that we had in that state. The one state that I haven't really done yet, which is funny because I live here, is Colorado. And I've seen most of many of the stores in Colorado, but not in a long time. So that's one of my next trips.
That's so funny that that's where you live and those are the stores you haven't seen. Though I'm sure, as you said, you visit some of them from time to time anyway.
That's right. And we have, as you mentioned earlier, one of our trade shows happens in Colorado. So I see all the booksellers regularly and I have for 30 years, but I haven't driven the state yet to go see them. And part of that is, it's funny that a lot of my region is easy to travel in the winter, which is my slowest time at my desk. So going to Arizona and, you know, some of the places where New Mexico, some of those places that I visit, Texas, is easy. But some of the states, like right now, I can't really travel to see all of my stores in Colorado because I would for sure be stuck in a blizzard somewhere. So I have to find a good time to do that. But membership development is the biggest part of what I do. And that entails not only finding stores, visiting stores, reaching out to stores, inviting them to join. And then once they join, I have an onboarding meeting with each bookstore so I can not only explain what Mountains and Plains can do for them in more detail and what programs are available, but also understand more about their store and answer lots of bookselling questions. I was a bookseller for many years before being the executive director of this association. So I have a lot of knowledge I can offer, and I certainly use that as often as I can. You know, I plan our two conferences. One is a conference in the spring, as we talked about, and one is a trade show and conference in the fall. I plan all of our educational programming. I plan anything that the association does. You know, we do an executive director and board retreat. I plan that every summer. And right now, as I mentioned to you before we got on the call, the association is migrating our website and our technology to a brand new association management software platform. So that's a big project that I have on my plate right now. And then my staff both have their own full-time duties, but then we all work together on all of these things as well.
And you mentioned a board of directors, and that's mainly booksellers. Is that correct?
It is booksellers. We have 9 members, and currently we have 6 booksellers. They are bookstore owners or managers generally. And then right now we have 3 industry representatives, which are sales reps, one from a publishing company and 2 from a distributor. Our bylaws have 2 different kinds of members that can be board members. And those are industry members who are in the book trade. So any publisher or any distributor or wholesaler, even an author, could theoretically be a board member. And then any one of our bookstore members could have someone from their staff be a board member.
Got it. And as soon as I asked that question, I was like, I know the answer, that it's not only booksellers, because I know Brian Contine, and he is one of your board members. So I was like, oh, I knew that. I've interviewed him before, too, for this series.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, he's great. And our board, you know, we have monthly board meetings, and we don't really have an actual system for their management of me, but they definitely discuss the end policies, and then I am responsible for the means. So they tell me what they want the association to accomplish in a year or long term, and then they leave it up to me how we will get those goals accomplished.
Okay, that's interesting. I wondered how the two interacted.
They're not a working board. They're a management and oversight board. So they don't actually do any of the work of the association.
Okay.
They all have plenty on their own plates.
I was going to say, exactly. I know from working at a bookstore, not owning one or managing it, but just working, how much work is involved. And I would love to hear more about you working as a bookseller. I was going to ask you what you did before you were executive director.
Right. Well, my career in bookselling started, I think, in 1989 when I graduated from college. And I worked at the Tattered Cover Bookstore, which is a large independent bookstore here in Denver, Colorado, for 29 years. I did everything at the store over the years. That store is one of the biggest bookstores in the country. So it is one of those stores that has a marketing department and a buying staff and, you know, all of the behind the scenes types of work that gets done. And so I was the Tattered Cover's director of marketing and events for probably the last 17 or 18 years that I was there. And during that time, I sat on the advisory council for Mountains and Plains, the association now, that I run now. And then I was on the board of directors representing the Tatter Cover, and was on the board of directors for 3 years and was about to become the president of the board when our executive director decided to step down because of her family obligations. And so I applied for this job. It just was a good fit at that time. It was a good fit from my family was at a place where it would be okay for me to travel more. And it turned out it was one of the best decisions I ever made because I never thought I would leave the Tatter Cover. It was an absolute joy of my career to work there. But this job puts me in a position to see all the bookstores and all the booksellers and support so much more about the industry. And the Tattered Cover is one of my members, so I still get to be very involved there as well.
And the Tattered Cover has been going through some changes lately.
It has. It has. It had a string of kind of unfortunate events, and but now is back under some really great management and they filed for bankruptcy. I'm not involved in any of those, obviously involved in any of that discussions in those decisions. So I don't know all of the details, but they've filed for Chapter 11 protection, and they are reorganizing and really doing some great work to bring themselves back. The pandemic did have a really negative effect on them. And then they had a sale, which did not go as well as they had hoped, sale of the business. So I think they're on a really great path now, and we're all just rooting for them.
Absolutely. I always want every indie bookstore out there to do just as well as they can. I've been to the Tattered Cover a number of times because we go to Estes Park every summer. So on our way through Denver, we always stop at one of the locations. I was at Fall Con, visited it then. So yes, it is a wonderful store.
Yes. And we have so many stores in our region, some of the bigger stores, but also some smaller stores. If you go to Estes Park, you're well aware of McDonald.
Yes, I love McDonald.
And that store is over 100 years old. And the Tattered Cover is 50 some years old now. And so you really want these stores with these long histories to continue and to thrive, even as the industry is changing dramatically. And the kinds of stores that are opening now are such a wonderful diversity of ownerships and even business models the industry is going to keep going and indie bookstores are going to thrive. But the old stores that have been around for so long and have so much history, it's really nice to see them continuing on.
We've gone to Estes for 14 summers, so it's been a long time. And I love that bookstore. And they have had a new owner in the last few years. And that's kind of revitalized the store. I mean, it was always so nice, but I feel like they are definitely doing everything they can now. And the store looks fabulous every summer and seems to be going great guns.
Yes, they were really lucky. The owner that the woman who sold it to them, which I can't think of her name, but the thing that I love about that bookstore, it was started by the woman who sold it, who was in her late 80s when she sold it, had owned the store. The store had been owned by the women in her family since it was opened in the late 1800s, I think, or early 1900s, by her, great-great-grandmother in her living room.
I just loved that because she told me that the new owner, told me that whole story. And I thought, and I think I knew it had been in the family, but I just thought that was so cool. And I just love that they're continuing it on. But I agree with you. It's fun to see the new stores, fun to see the old stores.
Exactly right. That's right.
Okay, now I'm totally off on what you're talking about. I was like, oh, I love McDonald's. I can't wait to go back this summer. So you talked a little bit about your favorite part of the job, which was traveling to various bookstores. Do you have a least favorite part?
It's the back end stuff. That's, I guess, I don't dislike it. Like right now, what we're doing with this migrating our technology. It's the necessary stuff, and a lot of research and decision making went into this huge project. And of course, it's costly, which is difficult. So that is the stuff that I don't find as fun, certainly. I do sometimes feel like I'm not the best salesperson, and obviously our income is completely based on me being a salesperson because we get our income from selling advertisements and sponsorships and things like that. I seem to do fine, but I don't think it's my favorite thing. But I do enjoy my job all the way around. So it's not that there's anything I, I don't struggle with anything. It's a good job, and the work is interesting no matter what I'm doing.
Nothing that you really dread.
Nothing that I dread, absolutely.
Which is so nice. Well, let's talk about FallCon and SpringCon, because that's where we've met, both SpringCon and FallCon. I am affiliated with Blue Willow, so I am very lucky and I get to go because it's a bookseller and trade only event. But because of my affiliation with Blue Willow, I'm allowed to come, and I just loved both. I've been to each one time and am so excited for going in the future as well.
Right. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed them, and it was really nice to have you at both of those most recent events. So FallCon in particular is a trade show. So it has both a big exhibit hall full of vendors, mostly publishers, but also people who sell gift items, anything that a bookstore might be interested in selling in their store, also some service providers. And then it's also a conference. So we have education sessions and author events to introduce booksellers to authors of mostly books that are forthcoming or recently published, things that they're going to sell in their store. So it's the attendees at our show are definitely booksellers at independent bookstores. There are also industry folks like yourself who have kind of peripherally attached to the book business. I will say that if any of your listeners are librarians, we do encourage librarians to attend, and we're trying to kind of build that attendance because we know that there's such a great connection between libraries and bookstores, and we'd love to have more libraries participate in our association. We have a specific membership level for libraries, and that's always an option. So the fall trade show has been happening for 30 plus years. It's always been in Colorado, mostly in Denver, a few years in other cities in Colorado. And we call it FallCon. It has been called other things in the past. And it is a large event. We probably have 700 to 800 total attendees there, between the booksellers, the publishers, the authors, and the industry folk. It's really fun, as you know. Booksellers are a fun group to hang out with, and it's really nice to see everyone. And then we have a relatively new event called SpringCon that we have in Texas now. When I first started at the association in 2018, we were still only doing a spring event in Colorado also. And that has a long history because this association was founded in Colorado, but it really never... The events never kind of expanded outside of Colorado when they should have at that point. So for several years after I took over, we did a spring event, a small spring event in both Colorado and Texas. And we finally got to a place in Texas with attendance and a location in San Antonio where we feel like we can put together a big enough conference. So we're only doing one now. So just we're Texas in the spring, and Denver and Colorado in the fall. And the spring show is a conference only, so there is no trade show, but there is still a lot of authors and books and industry participation as well, in addition to all of the booksellers that attend and the education that's happening. So we're very excited. This will be the third year that we're going to be in San Antonio, and only the second year that we're just doing one show.
I did not know the history of all of that because I just started coming when I went to SpringCon last year. So I didn't know all of that. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I started this job, I took over, as I said, in 2018, we only had 11 bookstore members in Texas. Texas had been a little bit neglected because Texas actually used to have its own, was part of a different association many years ago, but it never really, when that association closed, it was called the Mid-South Independent Booksellers Association. And when that association folded, and I don't know the date, but I would say it's at least 15 years ago, Texas and Oklahoma became part of my association, Mountains and Plains, and Louisiana and Arkansas became part of the South, the Southern Independent Booksellers Alliance. And Texas was a little bit neglected by my predecessors, I'm sorry to say. So we had 11 members back then, and now we have, I would say, close to 80. And the stores are opening in Texas like crazy. It's been an amazing thing to see. So we feel like we can really have great attendance at a spring event there. And this last year, as you saw, we also had people come from almost all of our other states, a smaller amount, but people from Colorado came, Utah, Wyoming, New Mexico, all came to Texas, to San Antonio. I think San Antonio is part of the draw, of course, for the spring show. So we think we can continue just to build on that excitement. And we're hoping for an even bigger and better show this year.
I met so many great booksellers there, and they're really vastly different, the two shows. And I love them both equally. But it was interesting to kind of compare and contrast because they really are different because San Antonio's is smaller. But then I got to really have all of these conversations with different people because of that. And then Denver was much larger. But then I also learned about so many more books and met different trade people and everything. So they both serve great purposes. And I think you're right, the San Antonio is a good draw.
Yeah, thank you.
Several people commented on that. So
yes, we love having our shows in one location year after year. And there's a lot of benefit to that, both in the cost of doing something. If you know, the show that I have in Denver at that hotel, the Renaissance that we're at, that it has been at that hotel for 12 or 13 years. And I cannot tell you how much better of a pricing you can get when you're booking something for years in advance. So I'm already booked there for 2024, of course, but also 2025 and looking at 2026. I can't tell you what a difference that makes for a nonprofit association to be able to put on that big of a show with kind of, you know, favorite pricing given to us, legacy pricing. And we're hoping to kind of build that a little bit in San Antonio as well. So we found a hotel last year, that historic hotel that we were at, the Menger, and we are going to be there again this year and hope for another couple of years at least so we can kind of build on that relationship. And you're absolutely right. I heard so many people say that, especially people coming from outside of Texas, well, I want to go to San Antonio in the spring. That sounds amazing. So it helps to have a cool place right by the Riverwalk where when you're not conferencing, you can be doing something excellent as well.
Absolutely. And the other nice thing about being at the same hotel year after year in Denver, for example, is that you know it all. So you know exactly what it all looks like. You know where everything's going to be set. You know what the rooms look like. And there's not going to be a whole lot of growing pains when you try a new hotel and everything isn't exactly like you thought it might be.
That is right. It makes all the difference. It truly does. And when we have to travel, because my colleague, Kelsey, who's my operations manager, she and I both live in Colorado. And so when we're booking events at other in other states and other cities, we don't see those hotels until we actually get there. I mean, once in a while, we'll decide to go and see something in advance. But we book, as I said, smaller things like our board retreat. And I never see the hotel till we arrive. And it's always interesting.
Yes, there's always something that doesn't go like you think it's going to. I just know from having done those kinds of things in the past that there's always an unpleasant surprise.
That's right.
It always works out, but you're always a little thrown off, like, wait a minute, but that's okay. And then reading the West Awards, I always love to follow book awards and to see who's nominated, see what I've read, what I haven't read, who wins. Tell me a little bit about that.
We're very excited about the awards. The awards are very long term for this association. This year, the one we're giving out this spring will be the 34th. Regional Book Award for our region. They have been called different things, but they've been the Reading the West Book Awards for many, many years. We love it because it really does the nomination process allows publishers and individual authors to highlight titles that are by and about our region. So from authors who live in one of our 14 states that we represent, or books that are actually about one of our 14 states. And of course, you know, we have, it is the West. It's not everyone considers it all the West. You know, there's some Midwest in there as well, but we're west of the Mississippi, let's put it that way. And the national awards don't always have enough of the diversity and focus, you know, so we like to just make sure we're highlighting the books that the bookstores in my region are most excited about selling. They're by their local authors, for instance. Our awards are not a juried prize. They are a mixture of both each book being read and evaluated by a bookselling committee. The committees are made up of our bookstore members. And we have 9 awards this year and, you know, different categories. So there's a fiction category, there's a YA, a young adult fiction category, et cetera, poetry, nonfiction. All the different categories. And each of those categories has nominations. The publishers pay a nomination fee to get their book nominated. And then those books are all read and evaluated by a committee. The committee votes for the short list in each category, which is the top five picks from that category. And then the public and all of the booksellers get to vote. And that has been so fun because we get thousands and thousands and thousands of votes. Lots and lots of bookstore staff vote. Authors can drum up their supporters to vote for them. And it's just kind of a fun marketing opportunity. Lots of social media surrounding it. And then we announce the winners with a pre-recorded virtual event. And when each of the authors comes on and does a little acceptance speech, and then booksellers can share that recording and those individual acceptance speeches. So it's just it's a big marketing program that the bookstores can use to sell a lot of books. And it's a honor to see. We've had books recently come out in their second printings, you know, when they go from, let's say, hardcover to paperback, and they have the winner of the Reading the West Book Award printed on the cover, which we think is just so fun to see. So it's starting to get some actual attention so that consumers know what it is, which has been great.
I love that. I always vote and I always share it with my Patreon group and other people. And I'm like, check it out. Vote if you want to. I think it's really fun.
Thanks for your support.
Of course. Absolutely.
And we've had such great diversity in just all sorts of voices in the nominations this year and in the last few years. It's been really great to see. And we let booksellers suggest titles that they'd like to have nominated, and then we follow up on those. And so we're getting really the bookstore favorites are getting nominated. It's fun and it's effective. It sells lots of books and it's just one of our better programs. I really love it.
I love to hear that because I love reading books set in this region. There are always so many fascinating stories. So I love to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, now we get to my very favorite part, which is always hearing what people are going to recommend. So what have you read recently that you liked? I feel like my list just grows and grows and grows, but I love to hear what other people have read and loved.
Oh, me too. It's one of my favorite things. So I read mostly science fiction, fantasy, speculative fiction. That's my genre. I'm in a book club, so I also read some more mainstream fiction on occasion, but I try to sway them to read what I want to read anyway.
You're like, forget all of that. Let's read this.
That's right. And the other thing that I've been doing in the last, well, since the beginning of the pandemic, I've always listened to audiobooks, but now I listen to at least one audiobook at a time while I'm reading a different book at a time so that I can get many more books read in a year than I used to be able to get. So if your listeners love audiobooks, they should check out Libro.fm, which is where you can buy audiobooks and support your local bookstore, which is really obviously one of the things that, since I don't support Amazon, is one of the things I most appreciate.
I agree completely. I love Libro and I've interviewed Mark and I also communicated with him several times at FallCon this year. It was nice to see him there. They had a booth and yes, I love Libro and I'm always encouraging people to use it.
And isn't it, just as an aside, isn't it fun to work with a company like that and be so excited about that company and then to meet the person who started it and feel like they're just a friend of yours? And that's just how Mark is. I love our industry because everyone has the same goals, no matter what side of it you're on. And everyone wants to be part of the community.
I agree. And that is one of the things I love so much about the book world is that I feel like it is so generous and giving and you always have something to talk about and everybody's supporting each other.
That's right. That's right. That's why I love it too. So what have I read and listened to lately? So if you haven't heard of Tamsin Muir and the Gideon books, there's Gideon the Ninth, Harrow the Ninth, and Nona the Ninth, which is the newest one. I was a latecomer to the series, and I think it was actually SpringCon last year when I was at the airport in Denver that I bought the first book, Gideon the Ninth, and I did not stop until I was finished with the last one. And waiting now desperately, there's going to be a fourth book coming, and they don't know when. It's an amazing series. It is science fiction, but it is also towards fantasy in that realm. And it's a little bit dark, a little bit queer. It's an amazing adventure and it's a challenge. It's something that you have to think about while you're reading. Anyway, I loved it. I love Tamsin Muir. I love her writing. It's amazing. I just finished listening to Anne Leckie's most recent book, which is Ancillary Justice, which is an amazing science fiction novel, one of those kind of epic world building, galaxy building type of books. But also the thing about Anne Leckie's books is that she pulls a very human story out of a galaxy of adventure. You know, so the story is literally about an AI warship that becomes separated from the ship itself when it is destroyed and is in a human figure. And so it's a single person that used to be a warship. And it is a fascinating story about AI. I will say that, but it's very human. It's about a family that they build, but it's also this really epic science fiction story. So I loved it. And I loved the reader who did the audio. And then one of my absolute most favorite authors is named Seanan McGuire. And she writes incredible kind of current fantasy. So it's happening in our world, but it's very fantastical. So the book Middle Game is based in the world of alchemy. And it was mind blowing to me. And I've read some Seanan McGuire in the past. And when I finally read Middle Game, which came out a couple of years ago, I went then and did a full deep dive into Seanan McGuire. And so I've read many of her books since then. And I love all of them. One of the things that I loved is that she wrote in the book Middle Game, which is an adult novel, there is a part of the story is based on some books that some children's books that are supposed to be a little bit, I think, like Narnia, like the Narnia books. That's like the example I would give. And they're in the world of Middle Game. These books are famous and all the children in the world have read them and they're old and et cetera. So Seanan McGuire had so many people inquire about those books that she references in her novel that she went and wrote them under the name of the author who she made up in the novel. So now there's a whole series of books by Deborah Baker that are also actually written by Seanan McGuire, and it is that entire series, and they're really good.
Okay, that's so cool. And I've definitely heard of her. Yes. But I haven't read her before, but I've definitely seen her name on books. Okay, I love that she did that.
So it's so cool. I was so surprised when I found it. So you read Middle Game and then you go back and you can read the entire series of books that Middle Game is kind of based on. And it was amazing. It's an amazing little literary experience.
Which are always so fun.
It's so fun. So, and I listened to most of those books I listened to. So most of the children's books that she wrote. So I listen a lot. So I've always wanted to get to 52 books a year, and I get close every year, but I haven't hit it yet. So I think I was at 47 this year. So we're getting closer, but we'll see.
You're like, this is the year. Between audio and print, I can do it.
Yes, that's right.
Well, Heather, thank you so very much for taking the time to chat with me. This was delightful. I learned so much, and I know my listeners will too.
Cindy, it was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for thinking of inviting me. I hope that they enjoy it as much as I did. It was great.
I'm sure they will. Thanks again.
Thanks, Cindy.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts From A Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts From A Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. I hope you'll tune in next time.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.